All right, this is episode 2 of the Ken McCusick, or I guess it's film study with Ken McCusick. Ken, how are you doing now? We're getting closer to football that actually matters.
Life is good, Josh, and that's the reason why. We're getting closer to football that actually matters.
Now, see, for me, it's life is good because the Orioles just swept the Red Sox in Boston.
Boy, it doesn't get any better than that either. I'm living back in 1974 again, so 43 years ago, basically this exact time of year, the Orioles played a three-game series here against the Red Sox, and they shut them out three straight times, 1-0, 1-0, and 6-0. And that included a Labor Day doubleheader that I went to that where they won both games 1-0. So,
yeah, you know, when they play like they did this weekend, it's where I sit down and I do the math, and I'm like, okay, maybe they can pull this season out. There is a little bit of hope if they continue to play anywhere near like this.
Mm-hmm.
So, but let's get to something that matters, but it's still practice time. So let's get to the Ravens played on Saturday night, week 3. So this is the week 3 is the week that really matters, I guess, because week 4 they're worried way more about health. Correct?
Yeah, that's a good point, is that the week 3 game is really supposed to be the dress rehearsal for the regular season. So under normal circumstances, we'd have seen all the starters for a half. Joe Flacco would be out there. Ronnie Stanley would be out there. All of the players.
Right. Now, so how's Joe look?
The defense looks fairly well intact, but obviously the offensive line and the offense in general are missing a lot of key players in terms of who's out there right now.
All right. I had my fantasy football draft last night. It's not a good year to draft Ravens. I was looking over it. And I wasn't really sure if there was anyone on the offense that I could trust to get me a few points fantasy-wise outside of special teams.
Okay, even in the later rounds, you couldn't take any chances on people.
I did. Late rounds, I grabbed Woodhead.
Okay, good.
Because it's
you.
A PPR league, and I figured Joe likes to dump it off.
All right.
So, but let's get to this game, and let's do this. We've had questions come in through Twitter, as we mentioned. And what's your Twitter again?
Well, my Twitter is at Film Study Ravens. You can follow me that. And Josh, how about you?
Mine is at Josh Soroka. But Film Study Ravens is the best one to send these questions. So we're going to kind of use these questions today to kind of gear towards how this show is going to go, where we're going to look a lot at the roster and how that situation is working itself out. Because, that's what they're doing up at the castle. They're working on that roster board trying to narrow down the numbers.
Yep, that's right. I mean, it's really, at this time of year, it's all about how are those last few roster spots going to shake out? How are they going to keep all of the starters healthy? Basically, they have bubble wrapped. You know, they're starting 22 plus probably some additional key players for this last regular season game that won't play. And we'll see a fairly limited slate of players, but there's still a few roster spots that will be on the line on the very margin of that roster, including some of those UDFA spots.
Right. Plus, you got to remember also the little tricks that they do with trying to. He's not a practice squad guy. He's not a regular guy. We're going to hide him somewhere else.
Yeah, on injured reserve.
Exactly. So we got to cover that a little bit as well. All right. So Ravens played on Saturday. The defense looked really good. Offense, not so much. Offense was really pretty poor. Let's start with that game. Were there key things from that game that Raven fans should have taken away?
I mean, I guess there's a little bit of everything here, but there was some good news. We arrived, players were just running out of the tunnel at that moment, and to see Marshall Yanda be the last guy out of the tunnel, we did not know he'd be playing. It was a secret to us right until we got there. Perriman was on the practice field beforehand running routes, and there was some Twitter activity about that. Humphrey sat out, but both he and Stanley are apparently back at practice today, so that's very exciting. Stanley is limited, not doing all the drills, I'm told, but he was back and at least doing the positional drills, which is something. Same with Humphrey, as far as I know. So anyway, injury situation looking up for the Ravens. Have not heard a report yet that Joe Flacco is back throwing. But it wouldn't shock me if he's throwing in the practice facility somewhere.
Right. What was Harbaugh's line Saturday night? Was it, I promise you he's the starter?
Yeah, I promise you he'll be back for week one.
Right, he'll be back for week one. The question is, can he play football week one? And what does he look like after without any practice. Does that kind of take away the need for practice, or is it just what they're going to go with?
Well, I'll tell you what. The way I'm looking at it for Flacco this year is I'd like Flacco to return to 2008 Flacco, if he could. Flacco's rookie year wasn't a spectacular passer, 14 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. I don't want exactly that ratio, so I'm not looking for that. But I am looking for more of a game manager and a guy who's going to allow this defense to help win the games.
So you're back. You're bringing up memories of Trent Dilfer, where you're saying this defense is good enough as long as Joe doesn't blow it.
Defense looks awfully good, awfully fast, very young, and very deep.
All right. Young is always good for your defense, but I want to start old. I want to start with an old guy and Terrell Suggs, because he looked good on Saturday.
Boy, what a game for Terrell Suggs. I mean, one of the things that people don't always get with who Terrell is, I mean, he's constantly a joker. People even question, could he be a leader given what his personality is? I think that all of that, by the way, is by the road, that people realize what a great leader Terrell is. But he's just got such a high football IQ. And the thing we've seen twice in games against Pittsburgh, he's added peekaboo interceptions, I call them, where he's off at a 90-degree angle from the quarterback. So he'll rush a little bit to the outside, and he'll actually duck down a little bit, preparing to spring up high to intercept a screen pass. And he did that twice, including in the playoff game at Pittsburgh in 2014, and once previously in a game against Roethlisberger, where I don't recall the year. He did it in practice last year in one of the most flamboyant efforts I've ever seen at the facility. That was just the offense couldn't believe that he intercepted a ball like that. And he had two passes defensed in this game, which were very similar. He got to the quarterback once. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to wrap up, but Urban did. Urban finished it up for, I'm sorry, Judon finished it up for the sack that knocked Taylor out of the game. So that was impressive. He had another play in support where he shut the door. I don't want to say that. I mean that. He shut down the left side for any run opportunity and turned Shady McCoy around so that he could be collected up in the backfield. So it's not always the guy who gets the tackle who gets the real credit for blowing up the play, but Suggs, outstanding game, and it's good to see him operating at such a high level when we're just about to start the games.
Is it a health thing, do you think, with Suggs? That do you think he's finally healthy for this return? Because it's got to take a good amount of speed and agility to make those peekaboo moves that you mentioned. And you don't really see that from an old guy.
Yeah, I think it really honestly takes mostly smarts for those. But the other things he does in terms of setting the edge and is really some of the other things he does to set up plays defensively for other players. I think those are more of the usual strength and edge setting that he's been good at for so long, and that frankly with his pass rushing are the things that will differentiate him as a Hall of Fame candidate.
So I think you were hinting at Hall of Fame candidacy last year, and you're still on that, and we'll have to see how he does. All right, let's go to our first question, and let's get into the offensive line. So Carl Gatzke sent you a message on Twitter that said, "I'm not sold on Howard, so who do you think the starters will be on the offensive line?"
Okay, well, I mean, a lot of that's going to depend on health, but with seeing Stanley return, I think that the most likely set of starters is Stanley at left tackle. Left guard is really the question mark, but I think that John Harbaugh is probably going to move Jensen to left guard. Center, I think Zuda will get the start. Not saying I like it, but that's the way I think it's going to work out. At right guard, I certainly hope we're going to see Marshall Yanda. He's already played once now and 10 snaps in the first game, so we certainly should see him. And then that will leave Austin Howard staying out at right tackle. And given the fact that I don't think any of those players, with the possible exception of Zuda, will play, I think that'll be the starting line. Now, the guy who got left out in that is James Hurst. And Hurst has played well enough to play tackle for this team, and I honestly believe he should be inserted at right tackle, and that the Ravens' best offensive line has Howard moving into left guard. So that would be Stanley, Howard at left guard, Jensen back at center, which I think is by far our strongest center, at right guard Yanda, and at right tackle Hurst, I think, is the strongest line the Ravens can field.
Yeah, but that just because it's the strongest, that doesn't mean that's what John's going to put out there. There seems to be some loyalty with Zuda. and I'm interested to see what happens with him and how he fits on this line.
Yeah, it's a real good question because I think Zuda is probably the only position he can play effectively at all is going to be center. He may not have the anchoring ability at guard when he didn't have it at center. That's a position that's generally a tad smaller. So we'll see. Zuda, because of the prevalence of pulls in Roman's system, a lot of them are one-gap pulls. Let me explain what I'm talking about when I say that. A one-gap pull, you only go around one lineman, so the guard goes around the tackle or the tackle goes around the tight end, or sometimes the guard goes around the center. More common are the long pulls, either going long left or long to the right from a guard who's actually switching sides of the formation and is looking for the first available block going over. Those longer pulls require a center who doesn't give up ground because then he may trip either the quarterback or he may trip the guard moving across. So in Roman's system, which has a lot of these pulls, more pulls and of both one gap and long than we've seen in recent years, I think it's important to not have a center who gives ground. And I think for that reason, I think Jensen is the better fit.
Okay. And I like Jensen. I think Jensen showed some stuff last year that, Zuda showed a lot of frustration last year. So Jensen showed something. So that would be perfectly fine with me. We'll see in a couple weeks what happens there.
That's a good question from Carl, by the way. Carl's a great football fan, lives in southern Pennsylvania, has been attending the Ravens games for a lot of years.
So you even pay attention to the people who tweet at you with these questions. You know all about them.
When you got two followers, it's not too hard.
Hey, well, we'll get to all two of them today. let's go to the other side of the ball. Let's go to the inside linebackers because that's starting to clear up that picture because that was a big battle going into Saturday.
Well, it's been a hole, frankly, for the Ravens because Kamalai Correa has been given the job and he's had great difficulty acclimating himself to the position. And I think he's played a little bit better each game, but still is not ideally what you would want in terms of instincts, in terms of knowing where he is supposed to go in the run game. And in terms of how he figures out how to use his leverage or move off a lineman who gets off him in level two. And that's probably his biggest thing. My complaint about Correa is when I see him get pinballed around in level two by the lineman, it's usually a guard coming out on him who hits him squarely, okay? And Correa's got to stop that from happening, but hits him squarely and then knocks him back. Well, he's got a few weapons at his disposal in terms of not being hit squarely. First of all, he can punch himself and try and get off to one side. What he can't do, what he shouldn't do, is either hesitate to move up or use both hands on both shoulders of the guy who's trying to confront him. Then he's just basically engaging and giving up his size advantage, his size disadvantage, to his opponent. So I see Correa still doing that last night. There were several occasions where he just squared up on the guy, put his hands on him on both shoulders, and that allowed him just to be bopped back a few yards and out of the play. So he doesn't have the instincts yet built up to do that at a level I think is adequate. I do think he's probably a step quicker in recognition than Peanut is in terms of knowing where he's supposed to be in pass defense. Now, Peanut is probably faster, I'm sure he is, faster in terms of getting the ball carrier, but Correa seems to understand his assignment a little better.
All right. Now, we had another injury with the inside linebackers today was announced.
Yeah, and a very serious one. Albert McClellan was hurt last week and in practice, apparently, and it was just announced today that he's torn his ACL, is out for the season. A player of his age, you really have to ask the question, will he be back? He's been a very valuable player for the Ravens ever since they got him. A special teams player, and the Ravens have a long history of having a special teams linebacker who can do a lot of different things. McClellan has played down defensive end in 2012, replacing Terrell Suggs at the beginning of the season. He's played outside linebacker and been a good edge setter, and he's played inside linebacker as well last year when the Ravens had a need. So he's been a utility knife for Pease on defense. Wherever he's needed, he's consistently been the most adaptable player to fill that role. And on a team like this, which has a big hole at inside linebacker, and they may actually need to make a move. It's very concerning to lose a player like McClellan, not just the additional value they'll lose on special teams because he's one of their best special teams players.
Right. And what's that, number five, number six since January? That's out for at least a year?
I've lost track, but it's a depressing number.
All right. Well, not depressing is we'll go to another question from Twitter. Doug Mintz, can they come up with a way to play three inside linebackers situationally? Correa versus the run, Osweisner versus short pass, and Levine in the dime.
Okay, real good question, Doug. And going back a few years, particularly in 2009 and 10, when Ellerbe was first coming up, McClain effectively had the role he's describing for Correa, where he would be a first down guy. And Ellerbe had an odd role that I'd never seen before, that he would come in on second and long a lot, and then they would bring in a dime package on third down. And we haven't had that in a while here, but it's conceivable that that sort of a thing could happen. What doesn't really make a lot of sense on that is if you have all three of those players and they all need to be active every week, it can constrain what you can do schematically. And they better all be special teams contributors, which they probably would be in this case, to make that work.
Right. You're then taking one slot and using three people. That fills up your roster pretty quick. Right.
That's exactly. You said it in so many fewer words, Josh. We got to have you on this side of the mic at some point.
Well, you got to give the correct answer. I can just translate. So how about the defensive line? How's that looking?
Well, I'm very, very excited about the Ravens front five. Okay, so when I say that, I mean the outside linebacker position and the defensive line. They're just very deep in a way I've never seen before. We mentioned last week that almost nobody is missing practice time on the defensive line to start with. So, they've got a lot of players. They have a tradable value there that they could use to acquire something elsewhere. Patrick Ricard, they have found a use for him on the offensive side of the ball. Now, he played three snaps this week, five snaps the week before at a combination of fullback and tight end, and he can make effective blocks there, and I think he'll be a good short yardage player for the Ravens. In previous years, they have often had a sixth lineman like a Chester or a Hale who's been able to come in and play a few snaps on the outside as a sixth lineman. And I think they may do some of that this year as well with Ricard at tight end. So we'll see. Maybe he'll even catch a ball at some point, and that could be fun. But be a big body that gives other teams trouble in short yardage.
Okay. I'm always good with that and always good with the depth of this defense. One more Twitter question. Johnny High Dukes, if forced between Willie Henry or Carl Davis, do you go with the experience or the extra year on the rookie deal?
Okay, excellent question, because it really gets at the larger question of how rosters are typically built and how roster battles are often won. So let's start with the most important part of this is, which is more important, experience or years remaining on your rookie contract? Very often, it's years remaining on the rookie contract that are tremendously undervalued but much more important. So if you have a rookie undrafted free agent and you have a fourth-year player, and we have that battle exactly happening with Taliaferro versus Ortiz or Ricard for the fullback battle, Taliaferro would have to outplay them by so much it's not even funny in order to get the job, because the role is fairly marginal in terms of the number of snaps involved, and if you take either Ricard or Ortiz and keep them, then you have three more years of eligibility, if you want to think about in the college time, or three more years of time on that first-year contract. That are cheap, and they are the fuel of football teams in this cap-driven league.
Yeah, I think we could get Johnny High Dukes on a rookie deal, because that sounds like a football name already.
It is a good name, isn't it? It's obviously a Twitter handle.
That would work well on a jersey. all right, so you talked about Suggs and Judon a little bit. How's the outside linebackers? You mentioned they're deep.
Right. So there's five outside linebackers. Za'Darius Smith has had a huge preseason. Suggs is Suggs. He'll be the most important run defender the Ravens have, and I expect him also to be a good pass rusher this year as well. Judon has dropped weight and become a leaner guy who apparently has much more flexibility. He looks better as a pass rusher, And he's batted down, I think, two balls in the last... Smith might have had one of those. But anyway, Jordan's looked good at batting down balls like the entire rest of the team has. They had six balls batted in the line of scrimmage in this last game. And just to take an aside on this, the Ravens are going to play Cincinnati in that first game. Andy Dalton, the quarterback of the Bengals, is one of the shorter quarterbacks in the league at about 6'2", and they usually exaggerate height. So, you know, when somebody
that's
says
with cleats.
Yes. So he's very susceptible to the batted ball, and the Ravens have a line of giants now for the first time in a while, and it really looks exciting as to how they can contain him with that. So Urban and Kafusi and Judon are and Suggs for that matter are players who can bat passes very effectively with that group.
All right,
so I forgot what the question was because that was an aside, but.
There was no question. I was just wanted some input on that outside linebacker group because we are going to get to the depth of the Ravens and what do we now do with this extra depth because we do have to clear some people off this roster.
Right. Well, let's talk about the depth of the outside linebacker just a little bit deeper because Bowser, I believe, is
my
the
favorite.
Most right, – there you go. Your jersey choice,
yeah,
right?
That's the favorite jersey going in this year.
Okay. Well, Tyus Bowser, second-round draft pick this year, now appears to be the most complete Sam linebacker they have available. So the Sam linebacker lines up opposite the tight end on the tight end side, often will drop to coverage for that reason and cover the tight end or even take just a short zone drop. Bowser has proven very good at that. He's good on screen recognition. He's rushed the passer effectively, and each of the last 2 weeks, he's been in the backfield diving for a ball that's been batted at the line of scrimmage. He missed in both cases and getting the interception, but still he's done a lot. Up to 40 snaps this week. He had only 32 snaps in the previous two games total. So I think we're getting closer to him being the starter for this team. That would make Judon, who's the other Sam linebacker, primarily a situational pass rusher, and I think that's going to be true of Za'Darius as well. Tim Williams, who was a third-round pick, the last third-round pick, has really shown some good pass rush moves. He'll be a situational pass rusher this year. I don't know that he's going to be activated for every game just because the Ravens have so much talent, but they may need to address part of that in ways I think you were just hinting at that they may need to consider a trade.
Well, let's get to that. There's all this depth, more talent, especially on the defensive side than we thought. We need some help on the offensive side. Which of these guys could we trade?
Yeah, well, you trade obviously from your greatest position of strength, and you like to do so after you see that your depth holds up. So you want to get through the preseason unhurt at a couple of positions, and hopefully you have some surplus talent to trade. And it definitely does not hurt to have extra bodies at positions that are size and shape positions. So the defensive line, that's a small pool of size and shape candidates that really fit that. You got to have athletes that are big, and that's a tough group to get found. So it's a good group to have depth in, and that's why the Ravens practice squad has often been pilfered for defensive line depth. The other area where the Ravens have a surplus, and it's amazing given how bad the pass rush was last year, they have five guys who look like they make a hell of an outside linebacker group. And they probably ought to let one go if the right return could be garnered. So if I had to pick the guys I think who make the most sense to trade, I'm going to pick you one of each of three levels of the defense. I think Za'Darius Smith, being a third-year player, still has 2 years of team control left, could bring a big return from somewhere if he's traded this year. So you could get an offensive lineman, I think, who's a sixth lineman for this team but would really provide valuable depth when the injuries come. If I had to look on the defensive line, I think Carl Davis, similarly a third-year player. He's almost an elder statesman on this line now because most of them are younger than that. But Carl Davis could be traded. And he's shown up again these last couple games, both against the run and against the pass, so I like what they could possibly get for him. So you could trade him. Could trade Urban. He's a fourth-year player. He's effectively a one-year rental. A lot of teams would like to have him, but he looks so dominant out there right now. I kind of hate to do that. And he has what the Ravens refer to as special sauce value in Brent Urban, is that if they keep him for the year and then they lose him to free agency, they might get a compensatory pick for him. So that's a consideration there.
Now, we can't fit all these guys on the roster. So why would a team trade with the Ravens rather than just wait to see who ends up on the practice squad and pilfer it?
All right. Well, good question. I mean, the most obvious answer is that once the Ravens release this, then they have to go through the waiver process. So multiple teams could claim a player, and that works from worst record up. So you would not want, if you're right, a team teams. That's in the middle of the pack, yeah, you want to trade for the guy rather than let the Jets have him or, you know, any of the other teams that are on the list before that.
How does the waiver list start before week one? Is it based on previous year?
Previous year, and I'm not the expert on that, but that's my understanding of it. And I don't know if it follows exactly the draft order or if there's some modification of the draft order that it follows.
Yeah, I guess that would make sense, sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, so the other guy that they could trade, and I just want to bring his name up, Trevon Wade has played very well at corner this preseason, but the Ravens seem to have other guys ahead of him at this point that they've decided on. So Robertson Daniel, who's a guy who's, I believe, in his second year now, and who's the other guy I'm thinking of? Not Hill. Hill's already made the team, so it's not him. It's Sheldon Price, who's in his second year. An outside corner, got length. Those seem to be guys that the Ravens value ahead of Wade. Wade is a fifth-year player, so the way to look at a fifth-year player is, for whatever time you've got him, for the rest of time, you have to pay market value for his services. So he's, as soon as you get him this year, he's a rental. Next year, he's a free agent. The year after that, if you don't sign him in a multi-year deal, he's a free agent, et cetera, et cetera. So he's a guy who played very well. He played in the slot 1 week. He played on the outside the other week. And he looked good doing both. So it wouldn't surprise me if one of the teams, and it might be honestly a team like Pittsburgh, decides they want Trevon Wade and might even be willing to give something up for him. Obviously, the Ravens might prefer that he not end up with Pittsburgh and become one of their better cornerbacks just because the Ravens don't have a spot for him.
Okay. Now, I hate that this is the season, the off season of injuries, so I hate to mention more injuries, but can we hide anyone on that's with the injuries that isn't a major injury?
Yeah, and that's done fairly frequently. I used to joke about it that they, you know, roll randomly for the injury or whatever, and you can make something up.
Right, so the question is, who are they doing it to this year?
Right, so the guy who is probably most likely on the team this year would be Wormley. Chris Wormley, third-round draft pick. He's the guy they got for the draft book they moved up with from the Eagles. So they traded Jernigan. They got to move up in the third round, and they got Wormley. And looks like a player, but he hasn't shown that much this year. And I'm piecing things together, I'm hearing. DaCosta was on an internal show called The Lounge they have, and he talked about how this coming season and offseason was going to be very important to Wormley in terms of bulking up and getting in better football shape and doing this and doing that. I mean, it really almost it was concession language talk about he's not going to do very much for us this year. So if they could have, they could stash him on the roster all year. They could put him on IR, which frees up the roster spot, and that might make more sense given the depth they have over the rest of the line. You know, we can talk about some of the other linemen later, but it does look to me like the use of Ricard is one of the things that's kind of pushing Wormley out at this point.
Right, so Wormley's the guy who we're going to sneakily put on the injured where everyone knows he's not really injured.
That's right.
And all right. Well, let's move on to the undrafted free agents. We talked a good amount about them last week. How are they looking now as we kind of seal up the roster?
Okay. Well, I thought what we do be a just a good handicapping exercise. There are some sure things already built into this UDFA group, but it's the strongest I think the Ravens have had in many years in terms of number of people making the roster, likely to make the roster, and the probably we can already start talking about career value on these guys, although we'll never know or won't know for many years until they match the 2002 group, which included Bart Scott, Mayaki Kimoiatu, and Will Demps. So those are guys who played for a long time in the league and were all pretty good. And it's unlikely that they will get to that point, but we'll go through these UDFAs one by one who really have a good chance to make it. I think there are seven right now who have a pretty good chance, and I'm going to give them to you in ascending order of what I think their chance is. So we'll start with the fullback, Ricky Ortiz. So I've got him at 20% to make the team right now. It could be more in his case. He certainly has beaten out Taliaferro for any chance to be fullback, but it looks like the team is moving towards trying to use Ricard in a dual role, which means he'll really have to be active every week. And so I don't think they've done very much with Ortiz as a receiver, which is something they would really need to understand and probably see under game conditions before they made the move to keep him. So my guess is Ortiz goes to the practice squad. We'll see Ricard at fullback, and so I give Ortiz a 20% chance to make the team this year.
All right, still a higher chance than me.
So 20% higher than you, yes. Yeah. Adebojo is a player who earlier I would have said had a much better chance to make the team as a wide receiver, because the receiving corps is still very thin and unreliable in terms of their ability to stay on the field, as we know from Brashad Perriman, and Macklin has been injury-plagued player in the past. Campanero has not gotten through a full season, so really need to find a guy, perhaps on somebody else's team right now, who can come in here and solidify that. They really kind of need an Aiken again, like they had last year, who they had a good feeling would play a lot of games. But anyway, Adebojo, good length, good speed on the outside. He has not shown the ability to haul the ball in traffic that I would like in these last couple of games, so I put him at only 50% to make the team.
Okay. How about Bradley?
Bradley, so that's a good one. He's in the inside linebacker competition and is someone who chances certainly increased for with McClellan's injury today being announced. He looked pretty good in this last game. He did some things where he takes more chances with himself physically, I think. Getting in at a runner's legs, I noticed on one play where he was in a mass of bodies while Correa was trying to shield himself away from a lineman. Anyway, give him a 50% chance to make the team. I think it basically could go either way. Bradley has the other thing going for him is he's a core special teams guy, but I think the big risk for Bradley is that the Ravens go outside the organization to either find a linebacker who can help them on special teams and also play inside linebacker, or they just go for an inside linebacker, like a higher profile inside linebacker who can do more for this team than any of the guys they have, and then they will have some tough decisions to make about players like Correa on the roster, but Bradley would probably go to the practice squad if that were the case.
Okay. Well, Rickert, you praised highly. He's going to make it?
I think one of Rickert or Ortiz is going to make it. So Rickert can do a few things for you. He really has to be active to make use of him. So I give him an 80% chance to make it and Ortiz a 20. But I think between the two of them, it's one of them will make the team and the other one won't.
All right. Is there anyone who's 100% making the team?
We're getting there. Okay, right. So my next most likely to make the team is Taquan Mizell. Now, he's been the Ravens' best running back the last couple of weeks here. And frankly, the Ravens' yards per carry statistics aren't impressing anyone, including Mizell. But he did have six catches for, I think, 54, might have been 58 yards in this last game. Showed an ability to adjust to the ball in the air that I liked. You know, caught the ball low, caught the ball high, and generally caught the ball on the run, where he's able to make a play with the ball after the catch. The touchdown pass he caught, nice twisting move to get the ball over the goal line. So you like that kind of playmaking. A lot of people compare him to Danny Woodhead and say he can do a lot of the same things. So I hope that doesn't hurt your fantasy team, Josh.
I don't care. As long as the Ravens play well, I don't care about my fantasy team.
That's the right attitude. You know, there's a funny thing on Glenn Clark's show. He said, would you rather go to the state fair, have to go to the state fair, not get to go on any rides, and not get to eat any food, but then if you do that, the Ravens don't get Joe Flacco for any of the games the whole year. It was one of these there's two lousy choices situations. And my response to it was, if there's any Ravens fan out there who wouldn't essentially go to fair prison for a day to have no food and no rides and just sit there with your laptop or do whatever you got to do, not having a fair experience, so that the Ravens can have a credible quarterback this year, you're not a Ravens fan if you wouldn't do that.
I wouldn't do that.
You wouldn't.
I think I'm not going to waste my day so that the Ravens can play better.
We're in total disagreement.
Now I've seen a Ravens Super Bowl 5-6 years ago. And now, if you want to throw that for the Orioles to pull this season out of the gutter, all right, I'll go to the fair.
I do it for them too. I do it for either. Okay. Okay. Right. So you wanted to hear about 100%ers?
Yeah, 100%.
I think we have two on the team right now. I think that Matt Skura now, because of the various losses on the line and the amount that he's played, he's really leading the team in offensive line snaps. He's going to be on the team. I don't think there's any doubt about it as a backup. He's probably the seventh or eighth man on the line. So if they were suddenly to acquire another hulking guard or whatever, his spot might be imperiled. He might end up on the practice squad. But I think at this point he's 100% to make the team. And the other one is a player who very well could start for the Ravens as the slot cornerback is Jalen Hill. Defensive MVP in the preseason. There's no doubt about whether he makes this team. I'll actually be very disappointed if they don't bubble wrap him for the final game and sit him for this Thursday's game. But
so you're marking him as an everyday starter.
I am. I think there's a real question as to whether he or Webb should start at slot corner. And Webb can do a lot of things for the team, and he's playing well. But Hill has a little bit better ability to track the ball and find it, which, you know, Lardarius Webb in 2011 was as great a cornerback as the Ravens have ever had. McAllister, Starks, any of the guys. Lardarius Webb's 2011 season was right on the level of Revis in terms of his ability to do things like find the ball in the air. He's older now, obviously. Hill is a young guy, and the value you could get out of him for years to come in terms of, you know, he's 4 years of team control at this point, is just very exciting. And I hope that he'll get a chance to start that is not injury-based this year, but I do want to see him get significant snaps.
Okay. Well, that makes a nice clear picture, or at least clearer than it was last week, about some guys who are going to make the roster. So everyone can use that to enter the contest on Baltimore Ravens website and hopefully win something. I don't even know what they're giving away, but
yeah, it's usually something. Tickets. Yeah, some tickets is usually an on-field experience. Meeting John Harbaugh was part of it last year, so you know, it's something that's worth entering, and it's usually a fun thing.
Okay, is there a Meet Ken McCusick prize as well?
No, that would be last place in the contest if you miss the entire 53.
Oh, now you're just saying it's a punishment. Yeah. So, all right, before we get out of here, one more question from Twitter, and this is from @JoshSoroka.
That guy keeps bugging us.
Every week he's got a question. And the question is, are you excited that Shake Shack is now in M&T Bank Stadium?
You know, they made a big deal out of this. For a lot of reasons, I'm not. But one of the reasons is it's on the other side of the stadium from us. So I've got this little selfish thing going on. And, you know, frankly, we Shake Shack, if I wanted a shake, I'm at that age where I actually have to think about whether or not it's a good idea to drink a shake because, say, you know, I'm 54. But we get a burger on the way in. You know, it cost us $5, and I can't see myself buying a $9 or $11 burger at Shake Shack with a $6 shake or whatever it would be. It's not me.
That's a way more thought-out answer than I expected. I have never been to Shake Shack, and I don't care about Shake Shack. I hear it's like a Five Guys type place, and I don't care.
All right, and
I don't get jacked up prices at stadiums.
Great. We're in line.
All right. Plus, I'm way with you on if it's not on my side of the stadium, leave it alone.
I mean, I don't even want to. I have to wait to run to the bathroom if I need to go, and I try and avoid those kind of trips. This is way more information than anybody needs on a podcast, of course. But if I miss more than one play, I'm very disappointed in any departure to the stand or to the bathroom.
I'm with you. At Oriole Park, I love the chipper. They make really good food, but they're way down the third base line, and I just cannot get there in the middle of the game. So it's not
there
worth
you
it.
Go. So 336, you never could get to Uncle Teddy's either. They were on the first level, right? Did they have a second level stand ever?
I have no clue what Uncle Teddy's is.
Okay, so they were like a handmade pretzel that was they made on site, right?
Oh,
it was close to our seats. It was
yeah,
good.
Right. Yeah, they're on the lower level. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd walk past them when coming in sometimes.
All right. So tell since we're on talking baseball here, tell them about 336 and where they can go to see your show.
336 has a new show just came out. Well, it'll come out when this comes out. It's being recorded right after this episode. And we're going to talk about the Orioles and the fact that they played really well in Boston, that they shut out a really good team. And what does that mean? Like, it kind of means they still have a shot at the wild card. They're only two games out at this point. They're eight out of the division. I don't think we're getting that, but the wild card suddenly is in view. So we're going to talk a little bit about that.
I saw something interesting is that the Orioles still have their destiny in their own hands right now for the wild card. They don't against the Twins, but they do against the Yankees,
right,
who they have enough games left. So if they won all the remaining games, they get the wild card at a minimum. And in truth, we know they'd win the division if they won the remaining games.
Right, exactly. And it brings up a lot of questions about Boston on the fact that they really had trouble scoring runs this weekend. Mm-hmm. And we all know the Orioles pitching isn't that outstanding. So it really makes you wonder if they're going to hold on to the division.
Yeah, I agree.
So, all right, let's go over your Twitter again so people can go there and your write-ins on Russell Street Report.
Sure, okay. So writing here on Russell Street Report, and if you look it up, it's film study. You can look at Film Study Ravens on Twitter. And if you ever have problems finding my stuff, just look for Film Study Ravens Ken, and you'll be able to find my archive wherever it is.
Yeah, and we're now on Facebook under Film Study Ravens, where you can see video of the show. And once football season kicks off, we will do this live on Facebook so we can interact a little bit. As well as we are now on iTunes under Film Study. So go on there, subscribe to the show, give us a review on iTunes. That really helps people find the show and trust that they should download and listen to the show.
Is a subscription something you can get anywhere else but iTunes, or is it only really iTunes that you have a subscription?
No, you can get it on whatever your podcast player is. Whatever you use to listen to podcasts, you can get a subscription to Film Study with Ken McCusick.
All right.
So, all right, Ken. Well, enjoy the rest of your week. Ravens play on Thursday. So that means another episode of Film Study next weekend.
Yep.
Or this weekend.
We'll talk to you Saturday, Josh.
All right. Sounds good.
Bye.